So, this is the third pulpit I have been in 3 weeks, and it's been a real whirlwind preaching tour, but I'm glad to be here with all of you today. So, when Saul set out on the road to Damascus, he had a plan of persecution in mind, but as with so many things in life, plans often change. For Saul, this change happened somewhere on the road to Damascus when a bright light enveloped him and the voice of Jesus came asking him, "Why do you persecute me?" This was a valid question to be asked of Saul. He was a known persecutor of the new Jewish sect that would eventually become Christianity. This fact is attested to when he requests letters from the high priest authorizing him to go to the synagogues of Damascus and find any of these followers of Jesus, bind them, and bring them back with him to Jerusalem. Even before this letter request, however, Saul had sought to scatter the communities of early Christians, driving them abroad. But as luck would have it, this only helped to spread Christianity, for the persecuted people set out and preached, dispensing the teachings of Jesus as they traveled. This was part of the reason that Saul needed to go to Damascus in the first place, to put an end to the scattered sect before their teachings would take hold. But on that road, when the light descended and the voice spoke to him, something changed. On that road, something inside of Saul changed. When the light finally faded and Saul was left without his sight, he eventually regained it and was not Saul anymore. He became known as Paul. Paul became part of the spreading force behind Christianity, carrying it with him throughout the ancient world, planting a vast network of churches and collecting alms for the poor and widowed. Now, I don't always agree with everything that Paul has to say. He can be a bit misogynistic by today's standards, and he spends a whole lot of time talking about circumcision, a finer point I really just don't care about. But I'm not so much interested in these aspects of Paul's teachings. The aspect that most interests me has to do with the transformation that took place on that road. The sudden change from persecutor to protector and propagator. It's a story of awakening to a new way of being, of casting off the old to make room for the new. It's a story of transformation and redemption, a story that speaks of hope to me. Hope because this story allows me to believe, at least on some level, that change, that transformation are possible. This theme of awakening, of change and transformation, is not limited to the New Testament alone, or even the Bible for that matter. Rather, some would say it is an archetypal form that can be found in religious teachings the world over. In recognizing this, we are freed in some respects from looking at such texts in a strictly literal sense. Instead, we can delve into the universal, identifying larger themes and concepts, and wrestling with them to create meaning in our own lives, or using them as a way to situate ourselves into the larger world narrative. The texts that speak of the life of the Buddha. Tell the tale of the young prince named Siddhartha, as I shared earlier. And when he was born, how it was foretold to his parents that he would either be a great king or a revered holy man, whatever that is. His father, preferring that his son be a king, set up a life so he would never know dissatisfaction. He would never see any of the hurt and suffering of the world. His father thought that through protecting him from these things, from these experiences and aspects of life, that he would ensure that his son would be a king. But that's not how it worked out. Despite all his father's attempts to shelter his son, Siddhartha still came to an understanding of profound human suffering. In the series of events that I described earlier, known as the four passing sights, Siddhartha sees a sick person, an aged person, a corpse, and a holy man who had dedicated himself to ending suffering. In seeing all of these things, the young prince Siddhartha was changed. He was transformed into someone else, into something else. Filled with a mix of despair and hope, Siddhartha left home and dedicated himself to ending suffering. He spent many years studying meditation and practices and engaging in asceticism, even depriving himself of food, water, and breath. All in an attempt to find an end to suffering. But none of these methods seemed to work. And no one that Siddhartha encountered seemed to know anything more than he did about ending suffering. Eventually, the disillusioned prince left these practices behind. He no longer deprived himself of food or air. From this experience, Siddhartha realized that neither his life of excess in the palace, the life of comfort and riches, nor his life of starvation and deprivation in the wilderness, that neither of these two extremes would bring about an end to suffering. In fact, both of these places in the world, these ways of being, seemed only to compound the suffering that he experienced and witnessed. Realizing this, Siddhartha sat down beneath a tree and eventually reached enlightenment and came to an understanding of suffering that is known as the Four Noble Truths. I'm not going to spend much time going into the finer points of the Buddha's teaching here. They aren't important to the view that I am putting forward today. But I do want to call your attention to this theme of awakening, this theme of transformation that is present in this story. In this story, we have at least two clear instances of this theme at work. The first coming after the four passing sights, when Siddhartha becomes aware of the suffering in the world and is called to finding an end to it. And the second comes when Siddhartha, having realized that excess and deficit do not lead to an end of suffering, and sat down beneath that tree and reached enlightenment. In both of these cases, the realization reached brought into existence a new way of being for Siddhartha, causing him to be catapulted from one reality into the next, completely changing his life from what he had known before. To me, this is not only a story about the spiritual pursuit of enlightenment, as we often like to focus on, but a story about how an individual was transformed from their experiences before finally finding happiness, that they were transformed by the realizations of the world through the things that they had witnessed in such a way that they were called into finding happiness, called into ending suffering. It's a story about transformation, about hope and possibility. In both the story of Paul on the road to Damascus and that of the Buddha, I must admit that I am personally less concerned with the literal facts of these narratives. And I'm not too worried about the implications of the dogmatic teachings put forward either. For me, it's about the universal seed I perceive in these two stories, the moment of transformation that takes place. The fact that two divergent cultures and world traditions both put forward a narrative that speaks to the possibility of human transformation is far more meaningful and powerful to me. This is not a view or stance I have always taken when looking at texts. There was a time, not too long ago, when I would have been more concerned with looking at the specifics of the story rather than examining the larger narrative of transformation. I would have let myself get bogged down in the literal meaning and gotten lost in my own over-analysis. But that has changed. That is not to mean that facts aren't important or that they don't matter, because they do. But not if they get in the way of us experiencing the deep transformational power that these stories convey, that they have been conveying through the ages, from one generation to the next, the power of hope, of change, of awakening. As people, not just those of us gathered here, but to make a generalization, as people on this planet, we are quick to reject something if we don't agree with it in its entirety, rather than express appreciation over the things we do agree with. We turn every situation into an all or nothing game, when instead we could be focusing on what is held in common. In recognizing this, it becomes our job. Our job as a liberal religious people gathered together. It becomes our job to wrestle with these stories, with these texts and traditions, and find a way to make meaning out of them in our own life and time. To make meaning out of them today. These stories represent a passing of human heritage through the ages. They are the foundation on which we build today. We can't simply ignore them, and they aren't just going to go away. We need to know them and how we relate to them. They are in our bones and marrow. And the more we allow ourselves to be transformed by these stories, the more that these stories will be transformed by us. But for this to happen, we really have to be willing to go deeper and look beyond the superficial level or meaning and find that meaning that resonates with us, that resounds in our life today. So I want to share with you all a bit of my own road to Damascus story. When I first thought about going to seminary, I made an appointment to meet with the minister at my home congregation. Reverend Lee, our interim at the time, said he'd be happy to meet with me, but it might take a while before he could find an appointment in his busy schedule, a reality I've learned a little bit about this year. When we finally had an opportunity to meet, we decided to take a walk around the neighborhood and talk. The conversation started with us both sharing a bit about our life history and the things that we found important and general background information that you might share with someone. Then Reverend Lee began asking me all kinds of questions about why I wanted to go to seminary and what my calling was. At the time, I had no solid answers to these questions. All I could really manage to say was, it feels like the thing I'm supposed to do. Still, despite my own ineloquence, Reverend Lee encouraged me and agreed to write one of my letters of admission for Star King School for the Ministry. From that meeting on, every time I had a conversation or email interaction with Reverend Lee, he would start out by asking me, how are things on the road to Damascus? I'd answer saying something sarcastic like, it's slow traveling, but I should reach the city in a fortnight. As I think back on this conversation today, I now see a deeper meaning, a new level of understanding to the conversation we shared. You see, I used to think that Damascus was the destination, but in reality, the goal is the transformation that is possible when you set out on a journey, allowing yourself to be informed and awakened by the world around you. It's not always a blinding light in the voice of Jesus or a dramatic passing series of events that leads us to wake up to the world. It's a process that slowly but surely raises your level of awareness until who you are is not who you were. You have been changed into something, someone new. So about 2 months ago, I was invited for my first time to preach at a pulpit other than a UU church. Some of you may have heard from me that I was invited to New Hope Church in Richmond. And this was a powerful experience, to go into a community that isn't mine and bring a message of hope, to bring a message of togetherness. I will admit, as I prepared, I was nervous, probably more nervous than I've been about anything I've done here this year. So a few days before this preaching engagement, I had an opportunity to sleep in. My husband, Elliot, had already left for work. Suddenly, I was awoken by a woman's voice telling me something I never expected to hear in my life, something that shocked me. The woman's voice said, I baptize you in the name of the Holy Spirit. I shot up straight in my bed. I could feel my heart racing in my chest. Feelings of confusion ran through my being. What's going on? I thought, as I opened my eyes to find my apartment empty of everyone but myself. I tried to ignore this experience for the next few days. I tried to pretend that it was just one of those stress-induced dreams, you know, the type you have about bills or the rent being late or some other thing that's really pressing you. But in time, I eventually could deny it no more. That morning, something inside of me had changed. Actually, I think that something had been changing for a while. But that morning was the moment that I realized that a transformation had occurred. It's like when a dam breaks and the water slowly builds up, filling the reservoir, until eventually the structure can bear the weight no more and bursts, sending forth a surge of water that washes away the old barrier that once stood in the way. I didn't realize that this was what I was signing up for when I entered seminary. I thought I'd get to Damascus and find it to be like all the other schools I had attended. But the reality is that the journey has awakened me to something I only thought I knew before. It has opened me not only to the suffering of those in the world, the people in need, but also to the reality for someone to take on the responsibility to respond to this suffering. Just like Saul, I thought I was setting out on my journey to do one thing. But somewhere along the way, on that road, plans changed. Just like Siddhartha, I found myself moved by the realities of the world. Things that once witnessed could not be unseen. I may have mixed up my order of operations slightly and reached Damascus before having my conversion experience, but in the end, the fact that this sort of transformation happened seems the more relevant feature. For in recognizing this, my sense of hope is heightened. I no longer understand transformation in purely abstract terms, as some sort of intellectual exercise that I wrestle with at night before I go to bed. I now know what it feels like. And in knowing that, it's hard, it's very hard to not be called to help others experience it too, to help others be transformed by the world. As Unitarian Universalists, when we talk about social justice, we are talking about transformation. We are talking about awakening to a new way of being, of raising the level of awareness on important issues such that the system we live in must change, such that the suffering of the world is alleviated and the beloved community is made manifest. When we talk about social justice work, this is the sort of transformation that we are talking about. Through engaging in this process, we need to be willing to accept a certain degree of discomfort. It requires that we stretch our understanding and at times admit that we don't know or that we can't know, or even that we are wrong. It requires that we not reject an idea in its entirety just because we disagree with a piece or a part of it. Instead, we need to be willing to find that common ground and engage in the larger conversation aimed at change. We can't keep talking past each other, but instead need to learn to speak in terms that emphasize the things we hold in common. We can't keep hyper-focusing on the things we disagree on, as we have done for a while now. When we learn to do this, to search out those things that we hold in common, when we learn to honor our differences and still find a reason to come together in community, when we do this, we will experience an awakening that calls us into a deeper commitment to justice and love. This is the work of the Church Universal, to transform the world in a loving manner, to transform each other so that the old ways may pass into new. All the stories that I have shared with you this morning, these moments of awakening, Saul on the road to Damascus, the Prince Siddhartha awakening as the Buddha, and my own life experiences, speak of the possibility of human transformation, of the real change that is possible when we wake up to the reality of the world and commit ourselves to building community and ending suffering and persecution. This is a message that I don't choose to believe in. I don't choose to hold this. It's a message I have to believe in. A message that brings hope to my life, to remain open to the possibility that things can change, that the old ways can pass into new ones. If I don't believe this, then there's no reason for me to be entering into ministry. For without believing that change and awakening are possible, that the work that I do, the work that we do together in community, without believing that somehow this work changes and transforms the world and lives, without believing this, it's meaningless. And that is a reality I can't accept. For I have seen the miracles that are possible when we come together, united by a common cause and purpose, striving to end suffering. I have seen what is possible when we are transformed by love. May we remember this and be awakened to the healing transformation of community and love together. May it be so. Amen, and blessed be.